This is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM. KMXT is also in HD, and we have HD2 and HD3, and we're streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. Just about noon, which means it's time for our noon news. Before that, some weather, light rain, 41 degrees out at the airport, northwest winds of 8 miles per hour. Tonight, about a 30% chance of rain before 9 p.m. Cloudy with a low around 32 for this evening. We'll see winds out of the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. And tomorrow, a slight chance of snow before noon. Then we could see some scattered snow showers throughout the day. Partly sunny tomorrow with a high near 39. West winds of 10 to 20 miles per hour, although we could see gusts as high as 30 miles per hour. Looking ahead at the weekend, it looks like sun. Keep our fingers crossed. Coming up, Senator Lisa Murkowski addresses the state legislature. That's after NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Alec Murdaugh concedes he lied to investigators but maintains he did not commit murder. Today, the once prominent South Carolina former attorney took the stand in his defense against charges that he murdered his wife and one of his sons. As South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen reports, Murdaugh testified in part to attempt to explain his shattered alibi in which he previously told investigators he was not at the crime scene the night of the killings.
Video taken from the cell phone of Murdaugh's murdered son shows a video in which Murdaugh's voice can be heard along with the victims moments before they were killed. The defense immediately addressed the issue.
Mr. Murdaugh, is that you? On the kennel video at 8:44 p.m. on June 7th, the night Maggie and Paul were murdered.
It is.
Murdaugh admits he lied to investigators about being at the crime scene before discovering the bodies of his loved ones. The 54-year-old says he was on opioids and paranoid about investigators' questions. Still, Murdaugh denies having anything to do with the murders. If convicted, the former attorney faces anywhere from 30 years to life behind bars without parole. For NPR News, I'm Victoria Hansen in Walterboro.
Disgraced movie mogul Harvey Weinstein is getting more prison time. Jurors in Los Angeles convicted Weinstein today of raping and sexually assaulting an actress and model. The 70-year-old is ordered to serve 16 years in prison after he completes the remainder of his 30-year sentence in New York for similar crimes. The founder of the embattled digital startup OzzyMedia has been arrested and charged with fraud. Carlos Watson was scheduled to be arraigned in federal court in New York this afternoon. After the company was exposed for possible fraud, it lost millions of dollars before it was shut down. Watson had previously served on NPR's board until he resigned in 2021 following the public meltdown of his company. At the time, Watson criticized the New York Times expose on Ozzy. He said the story was, quote, profoundly inaccurate. On the eve of the first anniversary of the start of the war in Ukraine, Russian President Vladimir Putin says his country will boost its nuclear forces. The announcement follows an earlier decision to suspend Russia's membership in a key nuclear arms agreement with the U.S. NPR's Charles Maines has more from Moscow.
In a speech to mark the Defender of the Fatherland holiday, Putin said Russia would replenish its conventional arms and strengthen its nuclear triad of intercontinental missiles capable of launching from air, land, and sea. The move follows Putin's decision to suspend Russian participation in the New START treaty, the lone remaining nuclear arms agreement with the U.S. Moscow insists the future of the nuclear treaty now rests with Washington and its allies, reconsidering their military support for Kyiv. As the war in Ukraine reaches the one-year mark, Putin has reframed Russia's invasion as an existential threat from Western powers intent on seizing Russia's historical lands. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.
This is NPR. President Biden plans to nominate former MasterCard CEO Ajay Banga to be the next president of the World Bank. NPR's Scott Horsley reports Banga would replace a Trump appointee who was stepping down from the 189-nation agency in June.
President Biden said in a statement that Ajay Banga is uniquely equipped to lead the World Bank after decades of experience building and managing successful global companies and partnering with leaders around the world. Biden adds that having been raised in India, Banga has a unique perspective on the World Bank's mission of reducing poverty and expanding opportunity in the developing world. Banga currently serves as vice chairman of a private equity fund where he's been an advisor on climate-focused investment. He would replace David Malpass, who's leaving the World Bank job early. Malpass has drawn criticism for not doing more to address climate change. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Severe winter weather is knocking out power and prompting safety warnings across large sections of the United States. NPR's Kristen Wright reports even areas of Southern California are on alert.
Los Angeles is getting ready for a blizzard. The National Weather Service issued the blizzard warning for mountainous areas of L.A., Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. That hasn't happened since 1989. It's a mix of heavy snow, strong wind, cold, and rain with possible flooding. The early weather arriving ahead of the blizzard caused a 20-car pileup and temporarily shut down a busy interstate.
NPR's Kristen Wright reporting. U.S. stocks end the day higher. The Dow closes up more than 100 points to settle at 33,153. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Kirsten Dobroth. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski gave her annual address to the Alaska legislature yesterday morning with more advice for lawmakers than she usually provides. First, though, she stuck with her usual script and listed a string of her highlights from the prior year. She said millions of dollars are coming to the state from the federal infrastructure law. She also mentioned nearly $750 million in Alaska-bound earmarks she requested that are in the yearly appropriations bills. And then she pivoted.
It's a beautiful day in Juneau. And as sunny a day as it is, there's also this next part of my speech, which is perhaps not so sunny.
She cited a decade of out-migration and economic stagnation in Alaska. The state, she said, is recovering more slowly from COVID-19 than almost anywhere else. Murkowski challenged lawmakers to have a vision and reach for it.
Alaska needs to be the place where people want to move to and want to stay because they have good jobs that support their families. They have a good place to live. They have good schools where their kids can excel. They have a quality of life that cannot be matched anywhere else. Where we take care of our fellow Alaskans when they hit rough patches.
Murkowski is 65 and has been in the U.S. Senate for 20 years. This was her first address to the legislature since becoming the senior member of the state's congressional delegation. Her more pointed remarks seemed aimed at lawmakers who were unwilling to solve the state's fiscal crisis except by shrinking government services. She asked lawmakers to think big, particularly in the area of transportation.
We need to be thinking big about how we move our people, our resources, our freight, our trash. Let's not lower our sights here.
She told lawmakers they can't rely solely on federal money and need to step up with the state's share of the cost. Murkowski wrapped up her speech saying she hoped she hadn't stepped on any toes and, quote, I didn't necessarily stay in my lane today, end quote. The U.S. Senate goes back into session next week after taking this week off for the President's Day holiday. And the fish processing plant in the middle of downtown Wrangell, owned by Trident Seafoods, has been shuttered for the last three summers. But as KSTK Sage Smiley reports, Trident plans to reopen the plant this year with a focus on freezing fish.
The royal blue buildings of Trident's Wrangell plant have been quiet and lacking that distinct fish processing plant aroma since before the pandemic.
You know, we never really wanted to shut down in the first place.
Trident area manager John Skoblik says that crumbling pink and chum salmon runs pushed the company to keep the plant closed, but projections are looking rosier this year, and Trident plans to reopen the Wrangell plant.
And so it's exciting to get the Wrangell facility up and running again. And we're excited for our employees, our fishermen, our customers, and our friendship with our community of Wrangell.
Wrangell officials have commended the decision to reopen the plant. It'll mean a return of utility revenue to the borough from the electrical and water consumption of the plant, as well as a potential increase in shared state fish taxes. Plus, it'll mean a 5% increase to the island's population, more people eating, living, and working in town. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game projects a pink salmon harvest of between 12 and 29 million fish this year, probably around 19 million. That's a few million more than last year, but a lower projected harvest than the gangbusters 2021 harvest of almost 50 million pinks. Skoblik says that in addition to the better outlook for pink and chum salmon runs, Trident wants to respond to the market. And the market wants more frozen salmon. Reopening the Wrangell facility will allow the company to produce and store more.
We'd like to have the capacity to be able to freeze more fish. It'll be frozen salmon of all species, but primarily pink and chums.
Trident has had a presence in Wrangell since 2009, when it bought out the bankrupt Wrangell Seafoods Company. The seafood giant operates about a dozen other plants throughout Alaska. While the Wrangell plant was closed, Trident still bought fish in the area and tendered the catch to nearby plants in Petersburg and Ketchikan. During the early pandemic, Trident's empty bunkhouses were rented out as isolation sites by the city government, but were never used. The Alaska Crossings Wilderness Behavioral Therapy Program also housed out-of-town guides in Wrangell's Trident bunkhouses before that program shut down in early 2022. Skoblik says Trident hopes to get workers in to start the process of reopening plant by the end of the month.
It's always a big job to get a plant up and running, but with it being fallow for a few years, there's going to be some extra repair and maintenance and some small capital improvement projects that we'll need to take on, some roofs, some floors, little dock work, little refrigeration work.
He says he expects the maintenance work to last until the plant opens in the middle of July. The plan is to operate through August. That'll include fleet services that have been missing from the Trident docks since 2019.
We're going to buy fish and dispense ice, and we'll do some gear storage and other things we need to do to support the fleet to have a successful season.
Skoblik says Trident is in the recruiting process for plant workers, but anticipates needing about 125 to 135 people to run the plant for one long shift. The reopening likely won't push the plant's full processing capacity, though, which Trident's website states is up to 750,000 pounds of fish per day. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
The Yupik School District is hoping for state support to restore running water to the school in the village of Taluksak up the river from Bethel. As KYUK's Francisco Martinez Coyo reports, the community relies on the school for a lot of things, and things haven't been easy since the water system went down.
The nearly 300 people residing in Taluksak are waiting for help for the school. Taluksak is not a city. 84% of its people identify as Alaska Native, and half the population lives in what is defined as poverty. They have been without access to running water from their well since February 9th. The water line has leaks, and they can't find the leaks. They have to haul the water.
And that's really a tragedy for the entire village, because not only do we serve children lunches, but we serve elders breakfast and lunch as well.
That's Carrie Del Signore, the school principal. KYUK News followed up with her and Superintendent Scott Ballard.
We have to have water to feed our kids. We need a safe place for the kids to go to school. You know, they need to be able to shower at the school. The teachers need to be able to shower in teacher housing. All of those things are dependent upon this system that's just barely operating.
Teachers in Taluksak are also forced to do more with less. They're overworked, too.
And we have to make sure that we've got people who can pump water, which means that our teachers are often working now 7 days a week because they're assisting still with the pumping water or opening the building or assisting getting the pumps running or making sure valves are, you know, open or closed to ensure that the water system works. And so teachers are now having to become experts in water management.
The school district has purchased two new 500-gallon holding tanks, Del Signore said, which provides more holding capacity. But they can only transport 200 gallons of water at a time from the village water plant over to the school in the back of a two-wheel drive pickup truck. A two-wheel drive pickup truck is not optimal, especially during the winter months in the YK Delta region.
The other day, we had to stop hauling water because we had issues getting the truck backed up the hill to the water plant because we don't have a four-wheel drive truck to do that. So, You know, if we can't get a permanent solution with someone coming out there, then we're going to look at needing funds to buy a four-wheel drive truck to continue hauling water.
To make matters worse, the village generator has gone down a number of times due to lack of fuel, and the school district responded by providing fuel.
The community is challenged with having enough fuel. We've given, you know, we have an agreement with them to provide them with fuel because they don't have enough fuel. And then our vehicles are run down and barely limping along because we haven't had the funds because of flat funding from the state of Alaska for school districts.
Ballard says they can't find the leak in the water line, and neither can the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. The water line runs from the well to the pump house over to the school roughly 3/4 of a mile. They don't have the equipment or the resources.
The only people that could come in right now and find that leak would be through the resources of the federal government or the state government to come in and do that.
Del Signore agrees.
It would be great to have a state of emergency declared so that we could bring in National Guard or someone else who has the resources to come in and locate the leak, dig it up and fix it. Those are things that the village does not have the infrastructure, the materials, the equipment to do at this time. The school district does not have that equipment or the resources to do that.
So far, no assistance has arrived. Students have been on minimum days, but with generator issues, homes are cold too. No water means less hand washing, which is bad public health, making people susceptible to illnesses, particularly respiratory, skin, and gastrointestinal infections. This impacts student athletes and extracurricular activities, which affects student mental health as well.
With no heat in your house, so we've got kids that, you know, are struggling to sleep because they're cold. When we can't provide meals, those kids, many of them don't eat. The fishing has been down. There's just a lot going on in the village, and they depend on the school. So, yes, their mental health and the teacher's mental health is affected because we want to provide these things, and it's difficult not to be able to do that.
Until the state responds, teachers in Tuluksac will continue to haul water and make it through the school day. And the question still hangs, would a situation like this have remained without intervention for this long in any of Alaska's cities? In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
And Alana Johnson fell in love with the fungi of Juneau's rainforest nearly a decade ago. That led her to start her own small local mushroom farm. And as a recipient of Spruce Roots Path to Prosperity Prize, she hopes to put local fungi on even more plates. KTOO's Anna Canny reports.
It's a snowy day at the Brotherhood Bridge Trail in Juneau. But Alana Johnson is thinking about summer.
This whole entire area would just be like covered with moss. And it kind of reminds me of like a little fairyland.
She points to a stand of trees across the trail.
And the forest is just completely lush green. Sometimes it's so thick you would not even be able to see from like here to there.
Because as her boots crunch along, she stays vigilant. She knows what she's looking for.
Under a branch or something, or like the space in the bottom of a tree, there's usually mushrooms in there.
And so in the February cold, there are only conchs, a woody, bitter shelf mushroom. But Johnson says the forest is abundant with edible mushrooms during the rest of the year. She's been bringing locals and tourists out here for nearly a decade with wicker baskets and a stack of field guides. She calls these outings mushroom forays. Her small business, New Earth Fungi, is a combination farm and education outlet where Johnson hopes to demystify fungi as food. Mushrooms have always been a hobby for Johnson. But when the pandemic hit, she decided to make them her livelihood. She was serving as a Peace Corps member in the Caribbean when all volunteers were evacuated.
I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I felt depressed about the whole situation. And then I was like, you know what? Like, maybe this is the time to, like, start my mushroom business.
She had been an amateur mushroom cultivator for years. So the business started with a few batches of homegrown oyster mushrooms, a popular variety known for its mild, savory flavor.
Because they're pretty easy for me to grow, and a lot of people are familiar with them. They love oyster mushrooms.
But soon, she wanted to move beyond common varieties to bring new flavors and textures to local palates.
So it's like, okay, what do people want to eat? And then what can I provide that people have not eaten before? Like maybe lion's mane. And they see it in the grocery store. They're like, what is that weird thing? And it's like got little like tentacles. But then I tell them how to cook it. And now it's become more popular. And I tell them what the medicinal benefits are. And they're just in love with it. And it tastes, I mean, it's one of my favorite mushrooms, honestly.
Now she cultivates 8 different kinds of mushrooms. They grow out of large plastic bags that line the white metal shelves of her fruiting room, which she operates out of her home. A combination of education and cultivation formed the foundation of Johnson's business plan. She refined and pitched that plan at the Path to Prosperity Business Boot Camp last fall. It's an annual business development competition hosted by Spruce Root, a nonprofit focused on community development. This year, the prize was a $25,000 grant for 2 recipients. Johnson was one of them.
When I got off the phone with her, I just like broke down. I like called my parents and I just started crying because I feel like I've put so much work, like time and energy into like all of this. And sometimes it can feel like there's definitely days where I'm like, why am I doing this?
Johnson says local demand for her mushrooms has been high since she launched the business in 2020. They're sold in a handful of grocery stores and restaurants across Juneau, but she's been struggling to keep up. Cultivating mushrooms on a large scale is hard. It demands space, time, and a sterile environment. Johnson says the prize money will be a relief. She'll use it to invest in mushroom sterilizing equipment and maybe a larger commercial space. She also hopes to hire help, which will free up time for the things she loves most, mushroom forays.
It's just such a relaxing but like healing thing to just be like connected and just know like what things are around you and to have a greater appreciation and respect for food.
And she believes that connection with local food goes hand in hand with a connection to the land itself.
I feel so connected to this place through mushrooms too. It makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside.
Johnson will resume her mushroom forays in the summer. In the meantime, she's excited to provide the foundation for Juneau's mushroom-based meals. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
New federal charges in connection with the FTX collapse. I'm Nova Safa with the Marketplace Minute. Prosecutors filed new criminal charges against the founder of collapsed cryptocurrency exchange FTX. A superseding indictment alleges Sam Bankman-Fried and his co-conspirators made hundreds of illegal political donations. Other new charges for Bankman-Fried include conspiracy to commit bank fraud. For the 6th week in a row, initial claims for jobless benefits fell last week down to 192,000. Further evidence that the labor market remains robust even as the Federal Reserve raises interest rates to cool the economy. The average rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage rose to 6.62% last week, the highest level since November. Rates had been declining but reversed course amid evidence of economic resiliency. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. It is Thursday, February 23rd. The year is 2023, in case you forgot. 41 degrees out at the airport, lightly raining, northwest winds of 8 miles per hour. And it looks like tonight, about a 50% of chance of rain continuing throughout the evening. We'll see a low of around 32 degrees, winds out of the west at 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, it looks like a chance of snow. Snow before 1 p.m., then isolated snow showers throughout the afternoon. High near 39 for tomorrow with a chance of sun. West winds of 10 to 15 miles per hour, increasing to 15 to 20 miles per hour in the afternoon. Although windy, we could see gusts as high as 30 miles per hour for Friday. Sunrise today was 8:19 a.m. Sunset tonight will be at 6:27 p.m. That gives us 10 hours and 8 minutes of daylight. Sunrise tomorrow will be 8:17 in the morning. That gives us an additional 4 minutes and 56 seconds of sunlight. Record high for today was 54 degrees. That was back in 1936. Record low was negative 4 degrees in 1975. And it looks like let's look at our marine weather for today. For Marmot Island to Sitkanak, there's a small craft advisory through Friday. Today, west winds of 25 knots, seas to 7 feet. Tonight, northwest winds of 25 knots, seas to 8 feet. Looking at Friday, northwest winds of 30 knots with seas to 9 feet. For the Shelikof today, variable winds of 10 knots, becoming west winds of 15 knots by the afternoon, seas to 4 feet. Tonight, west winds of 20 knots with seas to 4 feet. And for Friday, west winds of 20 knots with seas to 5 feet. I have time for a few announcements. There will be a Kodiak Island Borough Assembly work session. That's tonight at 6:30. Citizen comments can call in, limited to 3 minutes per speaker. There'll be clerks, agenda items for the meeting tonight, review of procurement approval level adjustments for borough manager, discussion of Kodiak Fisheries Research Center staffing, and discussion of budget calendar and policy decisions. That's again tonight at 6:30 p.m., and you can tune in here at KMXT. We'll be airing the meetings as always. In other news, the local Fish and Game Advisory Committee will be holding a public meeting at 5:30 p.m. That's February 28th at the Fish and Game Building on Near Island. The advisory committee will be discussing proposals to the Board of Game, especially the ones in Kodiak. The meeting is open to the public and is an opportunity to voice your concerns and suggestions. For more information and to contact the Board of Game directly, go to boardofgame.adfg.alaska.gov. That's again 5:30 p.m. on February 28th, that public meeting. And the Historic Preservation Commission will hold a meeting on Tuesday, February 28th. That one's at noon in the Kodiak Public Multipurpose Room. The meeting is open to the public. Agendas and meeting packets are available online. That's at the City of Kodiak's website. To request paper copies of the packet or for additional information, contact the Kodiak Historical Society. Their number is 486-5920. That meeting's Tuesday, February 28th at noon. And the 2023 Kodiak Outdoor Film Festival, that's coming up, and Island Trails Network is collecting submissions for their 13th annual festival. That's going to be on Friday, April 7th. But the deadline to submit your entries is March 31st. That's the end of next month, which is coming up quickly. So get out and start filming your adventures. You can visit islandtrails.org/film for submission guidelines and more information about the festival. In other news, the Coast Guard Marine Safety Office downtown has moved. That's starting Tuesday that they have a new location. The new location is 5211 West Rezanoff Drive across from Anton Larson Road. Their phone number will remain the same. That's 907-486-5918. And Kodiak Refuge Salmon Camp Registration Lottery is open. The Kodiak Refuge will be having summer science camps for students going into kindergarten through eighth grade. Find registration packets on the Kodiak Refuge website or stop by the Refuge Visitor Center. Packets are available at the front door or inside during open hours. Those hours are Wednesday through Friday from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. The deadline to enter the lottery is March 31st, so also at the end of next month. And the Alaska Business Development Center will be providing in-person tax preparation again in many villages throughout rural Alaska. If you live in rural Alaska, don't send in your tax documents to ABDC yet. There's a good chance tax preparers are coming to you. To stay updated on whether ABDC is preparing taxes in your community, you can visit their website at abdc.org.
It's a tough time, but each of us can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. All you have to do is give, be a pick, click, give. By supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD, you aren't just donating, you're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. You're changing the lives of Alaskans with the click of a button. Don't forget to pick, click, give when you fill out your PFD application this year.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI,
Since 2017, the GCI Suicide Prevention Fund has given nearly $500,000 to Alaska organizations and nonprofits in an effort to help prevent suicide and promote healthy communities. More information about suicide prevention resources and initiatives can be found at gci.com/gives.